Well, today we're going to begin by continuing our discussion about what relational youth ministry is. And I believe I was going through a list of things that you can do in terms of being relational. And I know I ended the last section with some rather humorous stories about things that I do sometimes relating to the way I put food in my mouth, etc. And again, I'm going to talk a little bit this week or today about kind of some things that happened over the course of last weekend and kind of bring into this discussion a little session on retreats. It's timely since Twin Oaks is going on one. It's a youth ministry here at Twin Oaks Presbyterian Church, and Chesterfield Presbyterian Church had their retreat last weekend. Certainly things we do in the fall. And how do those really impact a student's lives? What are retreats like? We'll get to that later, but I want to continue going through this list of things. And if I'm correct, I'm on number 10. Is that right, David?
I think so.
Okay, good. In your syllabus. I mentioned here to bring cash, money, do-re-mi, for doing things after you go to an event. One of the things that I think can happen real well is if you've got a vehicle. I happen to have a 15-passenger van the church owns, which doesn't have the church name written on it anywhere, at my request. A lot of people want to have their church name written on it, which I don't think is a bad thing. But I didn't want that on our van because I didn't feel like a lot of students got real excited about getting into a van that said, you know, Chesterfield Presbyterian Church on it, because it immediately, first of all, there's not many high school kids that are getting that excited about hopping on a 15-passenger van anyway. However, if it says church on it, it's even worse. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that or should do that. I'm simply saying what our motivation was. Some people will say, well, it's good advertisement. Well, if you put a lot of lost kids in the van, it might not be really good advertisement at all. In fact, it might be bad advertisement, depending on what is happening. But I take the van often. And the reason is because I'll find a couple students that I know pretty well. They'll have a couple friends, and they won't have a ride, especially if they're freshmen or sophomore, they don't have a license yet. They'll be looking for something to do afterwards. And so I'll throw them in the van, and we'll go. Inevitably, some kid's going to say, oh, man, I don't have any money. And I'll be like, oh, man, I got you covered. It's no problem. Okay, I'll pay you back. That's great. That's a lie, and they never will. However, at least they made the gesture. It's important to be prepared to do something afterwards. It's just a great thing. So I always have a little bit of cash with me. I never introduce myself as pastor or youth director. I simply introduce myself as Mark. And I coach our student, particular student leaders. Don't introduce me right away as youth pastor or youth director. Just say, hey, this is Mark Davis. What does he do? Well, don't lie. Say, oh, he's my youth pastor, or he's my youth director, or he leads this thing called crew, something like that. Because if I mention, or you mention pastor in the first sentence, man, a wall goes up. It's just brrr, brrr, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't want to talk to that guy. He's one of those religious fruits, and he's going to begin to talk to me about Jesus, and they'll turn and walk away. And so I encourage them, just introduce me as Mark. Tell him I'm your friend, but don't lie to him. If they ask you, you know, I know some guys that would say, just don't tell them, whatever. Tell them I'm doing something else, but I'm not a youth pastor. That's not honest, and so don't do that. Dress your own age, but in style. I know I've covered this at least once already, but I want to reiterate, don't put things on that are inappropriate for you in regards to your age. And we talked about that last time. Be yourself. Again, I am who I am, and I'm going to do certain things that I know are going to work to get students excited about being a part of what we're doing. You need to be yourself. If you are the kind of person who wants to nestle in next to a student during the whole game and talk to them, counsel them, be their friend, that's perfect. Be content doing that. If you're the kind of guy who needs to go out, stand at the snack bar, have hundreds of students that you meet, write their names on a card, walk away, that's what you need to do. Neither one is better. We need both. We need a team. Next, recognize that as you get to know more students, you're going to become more comfortable doing this. Your first step onto a high school campus by yourself, I don't care what people tell you, you should be anxious. You should be nervous because you have no business being there from most people's perspective. And so you're going to be watched. Students aren't naturally going to go, oh, cool, there's a 35-year-old person here to hang out with us and talk to us about Jesus. I mean, they're not going to feel real good about that. So recognize that the more time you get to know people, it's going to get better. Remember students' names. How many of you have a hard time remembering names? All right, how many of you know every person's name in this class? Nobody knows every person's name in this class. And we've been meeting for how many weeks? Oh, that's embarrassing. We should stop rolling the tape. We're going to go through some name exercises right now. All right, what I want you to do is I want everybody to stand up, and I want you to meet every person and remember their name in 1 minute. All right? Go quickly. We're going to see how well you do. Up and at it. 1 minute. Here we go. You better remember their names. For those of you on camera, can you believe that they don't know each other's names? For you, if you're sitting next to people in Access and you don't know the person's name either, get to know them right now. Don't just laugh at these people. Get to know them. It's interesting to know, too, that they've already read the book Connecting. We're going to talk about application here in just a few minutes. Okay, have you all done it yet? All right, here we go. David's up here memorizing them. That's what I have to do. Hey, whatever works. Grab a seat. By the way, there's a book that I've required you guys to read called Connecting. Have y'all read it yet? You've been here this whole time. Connecting, it's important to know each other's name. All right, how many of you think you could nail each person's name? Okay, David, go for it. Did you do good? And Mark. Okay, now do it in Spanish. Doesn't matter, I wouldn't know. You know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, isn't it kind of sad that we're not even in a big class, but, you know, we don't even really know each other's name. It's hard to learn names. And names matter a lot to people. Have you ever met somebody, saw them a couple months later, and they came up to you and they said your name? How'd you feel? You know, guilty because you don't know theirs. You, it's good to see you too. You know, you feel guilty and you feel impressed. I often do. I'm like, wow, I can't believe that they remember my name. It's hard to remember names. Why? Why is it hard? It's kind of floating around. And typically we ask one another our names, but we're so worried about what we're going to say next or what we're going to talk about that we rarely hear their name. So how can you remember it? And I tell you this, if you remember a student's name next time you see them, it's going to speak volumes about your interest in them. They will be blown away because people don't remember names. They don't do it any better than us. But boy, when you can come back and say, hey, how you doing, Chad? Hey, Steve, good to see you. It really makes a difference in their life and their perspective of who you are and how you care about them. So how do you remember names? David, what did you just do? Yeah, he was standing up here by me, looking at you, above you, going blah, 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 over and over, so he could appear pretty brilliant on tape. This will be his resume one day. Here, look, I know kids' names. What else can you do to remember somebody's name? There are tricks, Steve. Okay? It's not a bad idea. In your youth group, you can take snapshots of people, put them on your wall, put them in there, write a name next to them. Not a bad thing. However, I pray you don't go to a high school football game or somewhere and walk around taking pictures of students, because you have lots of time to learn their names as you're in jail. What are you here for? Well, I was taking pictures of students and they don't really understand what I was trying to do. And then especially don't say something like, well, I was going to put them on our website. You know, just don't go in those directions, because you really could get in trouble. Now, you could take a video camera or something like that, sweep along and say to a group of student leaders, hey, who is that? You know, we were there. I have them on videotape. What is that person like? Just don't get caught just going around taking pictures, because people won't understand that at all. Does that make sense? And trying to explain yourself. The principal, vice principal, they're just not going to understand, and they're going to think you're a little bit weird. That's just reality. However, in your youth group setting, boy, if you have a group that's large enough where you don't know people's names, Steve is right. Take their pictures. Get them up on the wall. Ask people their names. In fact, our church, every week, as a staff, we do something called linking. And I think we mentioned it when Hugh was here a couple weeks ago. We really will take pictures of people just as they're in the foyer moving around. We'll take pictures of different things just so we can see faces and begin to get to know people's names, because it's important. It's a sign that we care and we really want to get to know. Our senior pastor says it this way. If we grow to be 1,000 or even larger, I want to know every person's name that visits our church and that is a member of our church. I don't want to be at Deerberg's local grocery store or Schnucks, another local grocery store, and have somebody come up to me and not know their name. Now, is that idealistic? Yeah, it is. Is it achievable? It is achievable if you put effort into that. And we're not talking about groups that large. We're talking about ways to learn names of probably a lot less than that. So it takes effort. So take pictures. Another thing you do is just take mental pictures. Whenever I go to a football game or an outing and I know I'm going to meet new students, I always have with me an index card or two, something I can write on. And then if I've met 10 students, as soon as I get back in the car, I pull out the card and I write down their name and I write down some way I can associate them. And I try not to do it just based on what they were wearing. That does help, though. You know, blue shirt, red horse on it. Okay, I've got you right there. And I write down these things, glasses, brown hair. But then I'm going to try to think of something else that will help me connect. Twin Oaks Retreat. All right, that's going to help me remember that person. Because next time I see her, unless she, you know, is a single guy, she's probably not going to have the same clothes on. So you want to write down specifically. I also take that opportunity to pray for them. You know, Lord, I don't know if they know you. Based on what they said to me, I'm pretty confident they don't. Would you begin to show yourself to them? Show me how I can build a relationship with them. And then I look at that every day for a little while till that name gels. And then all of a sudden, I'm back on campus. And I can see, hey, Mike, good to see you. Hey, Steve, how's it going? And they're like, dude, how do you know my name? You don't remember mine? No, you're just that dude that was eating a hot dog. You know, that kind of stuff happens. So learn their name. Another thing you could do is in a conversation, say their name more than once. All right, Steve, can I use you as an example? Stand on it. Imagine Steve and I, he's a student I just met. So I walk up to him and some people have introduced me and said, hey, this is Steve. I'm like, oh, hey, Steve, we high five. How's it going?
All right, man. How you doing?
Come good. On. Thanks. Steve, tell me, what do you like to do?
Well, Davis, I
now,
I
remember, you're the student.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no way a high school student is this smart or this clever. So you're the high school student. So, Steve, what do you like to do?
I like professional football, and I don't like eye contact. You're intimidating me. You got gray hair.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Now, that's probably the kind of thing a high school student would say because they're nervous. Or they'd turn and walk away. Who knows? But you're going to say their name 3 or 4 times in the initial conversation. Now, don't do it where it's super cheesy, like repetitive. So, Steve, tell me. So, Steve, tell me. So, Steve, tell me. So, Steve, tell me. But just throw it in there in the midst of the conversation. Okay, Steve, you can grab a seat. And what it will begin to do is plug in that this person's name is connected to the various things that you're talking about. So Steve said he likes professional football, which is a lie, but because I know Steve. But began to connect what you're talking about to that person's name. And there's a lot of elaborate ways you can do it. You can use the first letter of their name to associate with something. Like Steve, I might think songwriter. I know Steve loves to write songs, all right? Steve, I might, if I have to go into the next letter, use T and think teachable, because he's a very teachable spirit. E, he loves evangelism. V, victory. You know, I think of the beauty he used to love, Carmen, and you know, probably still does, but victory and some of those songs that Carmen would do, because Steve would do role plays of those things, which is funny. Do you see what I mean? E, then last E would be energy, which you've seen just a minute ago. All of a sudden, I've got a few things that are going to help me connect his name. Now, you might be going, man, that's not worth it. That's too hard. It's very worth it. It's so significant, and you can do it. But the best thing to do is simply just listen, take a mental picture, take a physical picture if you can, and then go over it. Just use it over and over again. And once it's there, it will stick. My young life leader, Tom Miller, was amazing with names. I was dating once a high school girl named Corey, and Tom met her once. On the way back from a retreat he was on, his family was at Wendy's. I drove in. Corey was with me. Met her one time. I don't even remember talking about her that much to him, but about 5 or 6 months went by. We had already graduated high school. We were dating no longer. We were at a Bible study up at Oklahoma State University, and it was in a sorority house. It was kind of a guys and girls Bible study. It was, just happened to be in this one house. Tom comes up. I didn't even know Corey was going to be there. I see Corey walking to the other side, and Tom comes over. He's like, hey, Mark, how's it going? I said, hey, Tom, good to see you. He turns around and goes, hey, Corey, how you doing? Met one time. Hadn't seen her in forever. 4 months goes by. Knew her name. She was like, wow, I can't believe he knows my name. She told me that. That's powerful. It's important. Okay, any questions about that or other skills? Yeah.
One thing that I struggle with is just, and I don't know if you can speak to this, and getting over like the fear of, because a lot of times I'm pretty sure I know someone's name.
Yeah.
And so then like, I'm a little afraid to like, to drop it.
Yeah.
You know, to say, hey, Bill, and then, you know, just get like that.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
That happens to me a lot.
What do you do then? You know, there's a lot of things you can do. One, you can be real honest. Hey, is it David? And they're like, no, it's Kyle. All right, at least I was close. And then they laugh about it because it's not even close. And you laugh and say, sorry, man, I must have met a Kyle that day too, or I must have met a David that day too, or whatever. And they're like, okay, that's fine. And you laugh, but at least you made an initiative. Two, you can wait just for a little bit and see if it's going to come up. and just kind of spend. And so then you have to throw out those things like, hey, you, how's it going? Or just, hey, what's up? You know, they don't expect you to know their name. So try not to throw out the matzo ball and get it all wrong, you know, and go for the big high five. And they're like, that's not my name, you idiot. Okay, you're right, I am an idiot. I was just trying to be cool. Don't err there. Then you could be honest. I don't remember your name. I'm sorry. Now, where you get the worst one is when a girl or guy comes to you and they just bust you on it. All right? Like you've forgotten their name four or five times. And that's going to happen. I promise it will. And they come up, do you remember my name? And then I'm like, yeah. And the old Tandy computer is moving a lot slower than I wish it would. I want to download some more files quickly. Yeah, I know your name. What is it? I'm not going to play that game with you. Forget it, you know. What's my name? Mark. Okay, what's my middle name? Alan. Oh, gosh, they're good. And it's just not helping me. You know, just be honest. I don't remember. I can't help it. You know, and laugh about it. But then go write it down. Learn the name, because it does say you don't care that much if you can't remember the name. Another thing I will do sometimes, and don't tell anybody, okay, so on videotape, is sometimes if I should know a name, I just can't remember it. It would matter a lot if I did. I'll sometimes just say to somebody like, hey, have you guys met? Introduce yourselves. And I'll let them introduce themselves. Have you done that before? Works like gold. All right, and they introduce yourselves, and then you know both names. So that's another trick, okay? Now, this isn't completely about manipulation. It truly is about trying to learn people's names and care. So good question. You're going to fail at times. One of the things, as you're in a church and you have a more public position in the church, if you preach, for instance, or you lead worship, or you do announcements, there are going to be people in the church who assume you know who they are. And they could be people in the church that, depending on the size of the church, that have a pretty significant role. You might not know. I told you once, I think maybe last week, when I go through a grocery store, I rarely go to a grocery store now where I don't see somebody that I know, unless I go at like a really weird hour. But if I go during rush hour, man, somebody's going to come up and say something to me. And a lot of times, I don't even recognize their face. And they might say, hey, Mark, how you doing? Hey, how's the youth ministry going? It's going great. It's good to see you. You know, I have no context. None at all. But because I preach occasionally at the church and do some other things up front, people think that, you know, I probably know who they are. A lot of times, they're smart enough to know by the blank look on my face that I have no concept of who they are. And they'll say, you know, it's Shirley, whatever. And then we'll talk. But you just got to be honest. You know what? I'm sorry, but tell me your name again. And people are usually very forgiving. It's better to do that than just pretend you know it. You don't know it, and you don't learn it. Okay? It's important. Names are very significant. All right, a couple more things on this list. Ask fun questions. Fun questions generate good dialogue. The weirder the question, the weirder the conversation. And there are books to help you. Books like Would You Rather. Youth Specialties has a book called Would You Rather. There's 450 Would You Rather questions. And these are questions like this. And I'm going to have you actually discuss them. So you need a partner. So there, and there. We have two. I want you guys to get together. And this is the question you're going to ask. Would you rather be rich or famous? All right, have that question right now. Turn around to the person next to you, whatever. Pick a partner. Would you rather be rich or famous? Now, if you don't remember their name, introduce them yourself once again. Would you rather be rich or famous, and why? You'd rather be rich? Really? Tell them why. I mean, kind of did. Okay, next question, if you're done. Would you rather be rich and single or married and poor? Huh. All right, keep going. Would you rather be rich and single or married and poor? Yeah, but you're rich and married. So. Oh, Christian Rock? Okay, Christian Rock over here. Right. So Striper, Reunion? All right. Who chose movie? Okay, I can't ask you why because I heard your answer. Why did you choose movie?
Because I would not make a good
Rock. Don't got that one. So you'd make a good movie star, though. Oh, I like that. So there we go. She could be on the film. I love it. You're on tape right now? You're on tape right now. I love it. Now, how about this one? Would you rather have your eye poked with a stick or your hand nibbled on by a cannibal? All right, go. Discuss that question.
How big is the stick?
It doesn't permanently damage your eye.
How hard is the nibble?
If you have to ask that question, I know your answer. All right.
What?
All right. That question actually is in that book. And it's a question that once in a while I will ask people because you're going to do what you did. Oh, sick. I don't start my conversation with the school principal off with that question. But it's certainly one that gets their attention and they'll talk about it. Oh, and most of the time people say, I poked with a stick. Because most people don't know a cannibal. But that's a weird question, but you're going to have a funny conversation about it. All right, one more. Would you rather die by fire, burning, or by drowning? All right. Have a conversation. 30 seconds. You're hoping it's going to be quick. All right. Everybody done? How many of you said drowning? Okay. How many of you said by fire? Fire. Okay. He's thinking explosion. It's over rapidly. Now, suddenly we've gone through a host of these questions. All right. You're in a van. You're at a football game, wherever you're having these conversations. People are laughing because you can really ask some very, very silly questions. Would you rather have a dog? Would you rather have a cat? Would you rather have a horse or would you rather have a llama? You know, whatever. It's my question. Would you rather, eventually you get to a question like dying by fire or drowning. What can that do? Can lead you to having a conversation about death. Have you ever had anybody close to you die? How do they die? Have you ever thought about what would happen when you die? I mean, all of a sudden, you're having a natural conversation about something that's a lot more significant than your eye being poked with a stick or your hand being nibbled on by a cannibal. And I'm not saying you should do this every time you have this question. If it's not the right season or the right time to really present the gospel, you'll know. You really will. But simply to throw it out there, you may begin to have a great conversation that you never knew ago. Another type of question is to do the dream questions. All right, if we found, you know, as we're driving around, a bag, and it had $50 million in it, and there's 10 of us, all right, what would we do with it? What would you do with it? All right, do it to give it to the cops? Okay, let's assume we have to. But there's a conversation to take place right there. What would they do? Second thing is, let's say it goes to the cops. Nobody claims it. It's ours. We split it amongst the 10 of us. All right, let's go around the van. Start in the back, right corner. What are you going to do with it? And they'll start having this conversation. Does that make sense? And all of a sudden, you're going to find out a lot about where they would put their money. What do they value? And it's high school students. So, you know, they're going to, oh, man, I'd spend the first $1 million just buying a really cool car with a great sound system, you know, and you would have the same answer. And then you'll get the kid that's, you know, faithful Sunday school. Well, I would give most of it to the church. And you'd applaud that kid. You're thankful for him. But most people, you know, it's going to be all the things you're going to buy and do for themselves. Another great conversation. So ask fun questions. Last thing is, when you're doing contact work, try not to go alone, unless it's obviously a one-on-one deal. And I never do one-on-ones with girls. I always do one-on-ones with guys. And I always have people know where I'm at, you know, relatively, at least most of the time, let them know what I'm doing. But try not to do it alone. When you're doing contact work, boy, you do a road trip, take somebody with you. Take somebody that's not as good at it with you. Take somebody who's new with you. Constantly exposing them to the way in which we can build relationships with people. Because this is the best part of our job. If you don't really love building relationships, you know, you're going to struggle to really enjoy youth ministry because it is so relational. Now, you might not be a relational magnet who really enjoys hundreds of relationships, but it'll be very important to at least begin to build relationships with even a few. And I'm going to talk about how you break that down a little while later. Any questions so far? Okay. Well, I want to begin to move towards another section. This section you're looking at in your syllabus, ask good questions and learning to listen. We'll get back to that later. It's more about small group stuff. But I want to talk about just learning to listen in general, developing good listening skills. How many of you would say you're a good listener? Now, I'm not trying to make you be proud or how many say I think listening is pretty easy for me? Okay, a few of you. Okay, quite a few of you. I would say you're probably wrong. Most people are very poor listeners. Now, in a given context, when they can sit down, it's a one-on-one counseling situation, you might have some skill and know how to listen. But in general, we don't pay that much attention to all the things that are going on. Why? Too much is going on. Therefore, even the most skilled person who's a counselor, who's gone through counseling training, struggles to listen at times because of the amazing noise that we have, both externally. I mean, even as this class is going on, have you heard all the noises outside the building, the air ducts? You know, there's just a lot of noise. Whereas inside, or is it noisy in there too? Almost always, because of the amazing amounts of information coming to us. So I'm not saying that you don't have any listening skills at all. I'm simply saying listening has always been hard. And in our day and time, it's even harder because of the amazing amounts of energy. Well, what I want to do today is share with you some real simple ideas about how to listen. These were learned by a person who naturally is not a good listener. I am just not. I have way too much energy, way too much material going through my mind at any one time. And I desire to make people happy, lots of people happy. And so it's very difficult for me to be a very good listener. So I had to learn the hard way. And it came through people telling me, you're not a good listener. Now, that's the kind of criticism you don't want to hear, because most of the time, you want to be good at everything. And if you're good with lots of people, personality-wise, extrovert, your chance of being a good listener is far less unless you learn the skills. I was 21 when I heard for the first time, Mark, you really stink at listening. A guy named Keith told me that. Why? Well, he came to me with a problem, and he was one of my leaders on a Young Life team, and he stepped in and he said, I got something I want to talk to you about. Well, you know, I listened for a couple minutes. He told me his story, and I had the answer. It was biblical. It was right. It was concise. It made sense. It was the right thing to do. It was based with wisdom. I'm convinced. Even today, it was still the right thing to do. But I gave him about 2 minutes to tell me what was wrong, and then I gave him my answer. He smiled, shook his head. I said, you don't like the answer? He goes, no, I really just wanted you to listen. I did. And I told you what you should do. Is that wrong? Well, my wife would say, yes, it's wrong. And change, you know, I mean, that's just reality. But that's how a lot of us are. We have an idea, or we're too busy to remember. The very nature of which you didn't know each other's names is a sign that, because I'm pretty confident I've said your names, you have at least once in this class, it's just hard to listen today. And so I want to look at some things that are going to help us become better listeners, because high school students and middle school students and people in general want people to listen to. That's what connecting was all about. If we had more people to simply step back, listen, to talk to, it would be so much more effective. We would be so much more effective as a church. So why is listening difficult? I have some blanks here, some things I have found. One, I think listening is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because you're going to probably hear things from people that you might not know what to do with. Too much information, too little information, information that kind of shocks you or scares you, you're just not sure. Sometimes listening is difficult because it's uninteresting. You're just not interested in what's going on. Kirk Cloninger does a spill. He's the guy who was here on campus last week doing some drama for us. And he does this spill as he's using this idea that people have about God. He kind of role plays God as like a mechanic who's trying to run this shop and kind of just keep the whole world universe going. And this girl's coming to him with a prayer request. And he's like, all right, you got 10 seconds. You know, and he moves on. He's yelling at you know, Peter, and he's yelling at Michael, and he's yelling at the other angels and screaming at them. And then he comes back to the girl. Guys, yeah, you got 5 seconds now. What is it? What? Your boyfriend broke up with you. Like, I got time for that. You know what I mean? There's going to be times in your life when you will have people bring things to you that just honestly aren't that interesting. They are to them, but not to you. They're kind of boring. They're at a bad time. And it's going to be tough for you to engage them in terms of listening. It will. Believe me. If you're in a ministry and you're having a major impact in people's lives, regardless of size, there's going to be a time when it just becomes so routine. And, you know, a little seventh grade girl's boyfriend that broke her heart, it's just not going to matter compared to the big story that you're having to deal with in another person's life. Does that make sense? But you don't want to communicate that. Next, why is listening difficult? Because of the noise of our world, which I've mentioned already, inside and out. It's just going to be hard for you to settle in and listen to what's going on. You'll be listening in your office, the lawnmower comes by, the phone's ringing. You know, I realized once I was talking to somebody, and as I was talking to them in my office, the phone kept ringing. Now we have caller ID, and I could look over there and I could see who's calling. And as soon as I was tempted to do that, I realized I'm communicating to this person I'm talking to that who might be calling is more interesting to me than the person I'm talking to. Another challenge to listening, what makes it difficult, is the mere fact that we have so much going on in our life as well. Not just the noise, but we might be listening to people who've got issues that are stirring us as well because of the own issues we have. And it's just tough to hear. Another problem is the stories in which they're bringing to us might be so painful and so real and so broken that it's really difficult to listen and process. And another challenge in listening is the person telling the story and the way and the manner in which they do tell it. It can be very challenging and very frustrating. For instance, if they're repeating themselves over and over and over again, you just kind of want to look at them and say, okay, I heard that already. Get on with the story. And you're communicating to them very clearly, I'm not that interested in what you have to say. There's a lot of other things to do, but I want to focus now on how do you become a good listener? Anybody can learn to be a good listener. When I was in my premarital counseling, before we got married, we took several personality profiles and exams through our surveys, through the different tests that we were taking to get ready for marriage. It was great. I, you know, didn't do that well on a lot of them, you know, just because I don't like to follow directions. And that was very clear because in each exam I did something wrong. And the minister made fun of me for that and said, Christina, be prepared for this. Mark is not a guy that's going to open the instructions, look at it. He's just going to begin to put things together and it's probably going to be a mess. And it continues to be that way in our marriage today. It's funny. But on one exam, the Myers-Briggs, the score of extrovert to introvert, I didn't score 1 point on introvert. None, not even one, which means that I was the extreme extrovert, meaning I get my energy from being around people. Well, that means most likely I'm not going to naturally be a good listener, but anybody can learn to be a good listener if they know what to do, they have self-control, and they see the value of what's taking place. And now, through lots of reading and study and practice, I've learned the skill of what it takes to be a good listener. But I know, based on my personality, that is not going to be the primary passion of my life, to sit in my office. I used to think, oh, maybe I'll go into counseling. But that's not the primary passion of my life. So I know that that's not the very best thing for me to be doing. But you, on the other hand, may be exceptionally skilled in that way, naturally, and they can help other people grow in that way. My wife, for instance, is way over here. I'm way over here, and that's natural. Just so you know, too, if I was to take the Myers-Briggs test today, I would be far more in the middle than I was before because I get a lot more energy now from being alone than I do from being with people. And that's pretty normal. You'll see those change patterns in your life. So how can we learn to become good listeners? First, train yourself to have good listening habits. And these are some that we're going to look at. And I want to do this in the context of a couple role plays just to make it fun. Eye contact is a critical element of listening to people. If you don't have it, it doesn't communicate that much warmth or that much interest. So, let's have a little role play. Who should I use? Any volunteers? Anybody want? Besides Steve, because Steve will volunteer. I know he will. And I'm going to use him in a minute. Anybody? Okay, good. You're not looking at me, so I'm going to use you. Come on up here. This is perfect. We're going to pull these chairs together. And we'll do the chairs. I want us to assume that you've asked to have a meeting with me to talk about something. And I want you guys just to watch what I do and tell me what's wrong with this picture. You can just tell me I am. I'm the counselor. You'll see why in a second. I want you just to come and tell me about some problem, you know, that you're having that you would like to talk to me about. Okay? You could be either one, kid or mom, whichever you prefer. Which would you prefer? Okay, so you're the mom. She's coming in as a mom, an issue she's struggling with. I'm the youth pastor, the resident professional with youth and counseling. So here I am. We're in my office. Okay, are we ready? Tape's rolling. Here we go. Just start talking. Tell me what's wrong.
Well, in the youth group, all the guys are hugging the girls all the time, and I'm just not comfortable with that.
So your kid's involved in the youth group? That's great. So what's wrong?
Well, I don't think that's very appropriate.
That your kid's involved in the youth group?
No, all the huggy.
So your kid likes to hug?
No, the boys like to hug. The girls.
Oh, so your kid's not a boy. Okay. Nice to know that. I don't know her name, though. What's her name again?
Sarah.
Sarah. All right. Well, what's Sally's problem?
Sarah.
What's Sarah's phone number?
3947437.
All right, got it. Got it right in there now. That way I'll always remember it. All right. Well, yeah, we got to work on that. We're not very good. We're not very good at helping the guys and the girls connect. So that's something I should probably teach on that pretty soon.
No, they are connecting.
Well, that's good then. I mean, oh, yeah, we don't want them to physically connect. You know, but a little touch. I mean, you know what I mean? So, well, anyway.
I just wanted to know what you thought was appropriate.
Oh, well, I think, what do you think? I do too. Okay, now, stay right there a second. What are some things that I'm doing that are absolutely awful?
You're making me so nervous.
Why am I making you nervous?
You move too much.
Okay. Okay, so I'm moving a lot. All right, I'm going to write these down. You stay there, though. We're not done yet. All right, I move too much. So I'm fidgety. All right, what else was I doing? Okay. Well, but repeating is a good listening technique, but you certainly want to make sure it's what they said. Why couldn't I repeat what you said? Because I wasn't really listening. And what indicated that? What else did I do that was very poor? Okay. Looking everywhere. Looking everywhere else but her. Okay. What else? Okay. I had no clue who your daughter was, and, you know, so I obviously just demonstrated there that I didn't know or didn't listen very well. Period, not just in this encounter. All right? In other words, it was like, this is no big deal. This is kind of unimportant to me right now, and therefore, your issue. What's the big deal? So, girls and guys are hugging. Come on, get over it. All right? This is role play, by the way, on tape. Anything else that I did that was just... Okay, so eye contact. I look everywhere else, but eye contact in general was just not good at all. Okay, and that's kind of one of the first things we're talking about. All right, let's change the scenario a little bit, and let's pretend I've been, you know, I ordered a tape, you know, on late night TV about how to be a good listener, and, you know, principle number one, which is what I'm working on this week, because you take one step at a time, is good eye contact. And tell me how much of an improvement I'm making. Okay, basically just start off with the same scenario.
Mark, I kind of have a problem that worries me. Now I understand why the boys have the problem.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's hug. All right, did you see what she did whenever I moved in? What did she do?
Pulled back.
Yeah, whoa! It's the close talker, you know, too much intensity. But even if I scooted back and had good eye contact, watch how this feels. Go ahead.
Mark, I sort of have a problem. It seems like...
Okay, and it might not be easy to see on camera, but just the intense stare into her eyes is frightening. It's just, it's intimidating, and they're not going to really be that open and welcome. Now, this is what's taking place in kind of a real formal counseling situation. A couple more things. Just kind of tell me, what's my body language this time, and tell me what it communicates. Okay, go ahead.
Mark, I kind of have a problem with the youth group.
Okay, what's wrong?
The guys seem to be hugging the girls all the time, and I'm not sure the girls know what they may be up to or what. I'm just uncomfortable with it.
With the kind of inappropriate behavior?
The girls kind of like it, and I'm not sure what the guys are thinking.
Okay. What do you think we should do?
Well, I think sometimes it's not appropriate, especially when I hardly know the girls.
Yeah. Okay, based on my body, what does this communicate?
You're not really confused. You think I'm too uptight.
Okay, I think you're too uptight. What else? What does it communicate to you guys out there? Not very professional, is it? You know. Okay, what's the positive it communicates? Yeah, I'm pretty relaxed. You know, let's talk about it, you know. And there will be a time with the right people, based on the right relationship, a posture, probably not this relaxed, but semi-relaxed, will be very, very open and inviting. We'll talk about that. Now, let's do one more, and then We're going to take a break and do some more of these in a minute. This is going to be, we're standing up, okay? You are coming to me and you are anxious about this problem. It's right after church, okay? You just walk in the Sunday school room to pick your daughter up. You saw lots of hugging and physical activity taking place. And so there's a lot of anxiety. There's lots of people in the foyer of the church. We're getting ready to talk, okay? And you really want to talk to me about this right now, okay? So I'm saying goodbye to people. I want you to interrupt me and try to have a conversation, okay? Hey, great to meet you guys. Glad you were here. Yeah, sure. So glad you came to church. Hope I'll see you next week. Yeah, let's talk about it. Go ahead. So what's wrong?
Do you think it's necessary the boys are just all over these girls?
Yeah. Hey, see you tonight at youth group. Yeah. I'm talking about hugging and kissing. Yeah. Okay, so what is it you want to talk about?
Never mind?
No, I really want to know. Hurry, I got like 2 minutes.
I'll find somebody else.
You'll find somebody else. Okay. Now, she would feel like I want to find somebody else. It's possible, though, and that will happen, by the way, people will interrupt you. You need to say, hey, give me 5 minutes. I need to finish saying goodbye to people. No, I really need to talk to you about this right now. Okay. Chances are they really don't, first of all. They feel like they need to. And you need to identify that with them. But don't feel like you have to respond to that demand right then. Take a little bit of time, step back, and then have a conversation in a few minutes. And then if you don't have a lot of time still then, set up an appointment. Let's take a break, and then we're going to continue this role play in just a second.